and welcome to the latest episode of the Online Warriors podcast, an April Fool's Day record. It's coming out on April 3rd, but we're recording on April 1st. Tectic, Nerd Bomber, are you guys planning any pranks? You haven't pranked me yet, which I'm very appreciative of. Are you planning any pranks?
Wouldn't it be funny if my prank was that I didn't actually hit record and we recorded a whole episode, but I didn't record it?
That would be hilarious. <right? laughs>
I didn't actually do that.
Or did I?
As we look back, I'm Lady Six. I have Nerd Bomber Tectic here with me. Got a jam-packed
episode. Oh, we should have introduced ourselves as the wrong names. That would have been a great April Fool's.
I've literally done that and we had to edit it out, I believe. I believe I've literally said I'm Tectic at one point.
No, and welcome to the, Zippity-Doo-Dahs podcast.
The Zippity-Doo-Dahs, that's pretty good. Is that your alternate podcast that you're planning with other people?
Yeah, what is that genre of music? Scat?
Scat? To scat cast? No, that's wrong.
We exclusively talk about...
scat cast. You exclusively just...
Is it scat? What is the genre? You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's scat.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, it's scat. That's what we talk about on the Zippity-Doo-Dah cast.
Zippity-Doo-Dah cast. Have you guys been fooled today? Has anything happened to you?
No, honestly, I was a little shocked. I forgot that it was April Fool's Day until today. I've more or less stayed off of Twitter today, and I have not been fooled, not once.
I've seen some hilarious stuff on Twitter, but it was very evident. There was a fantastic Nintendo product that I saw that came out, and it was amazing.
I feel like there's not a lot of fooling going on Twitter. I want to give Twitter users credit and say that a lot of Twitter users are pretty discerning. They're on the lookout for stuff. And I will say, when I wake up on April Fool's Day, I know it's April Fool's Day and I'm alert and I'm on the watch. I don't know, it's not like something terrible happened to me on April Fool's Day where someone pranked me real good. I just I feel like people are out to get me. So I'm always just on my guard. I have been fooled a couple times today on the internet, but not give people money fooled, obviously. But I've seen a couple of things. It seems like Facebook is where a lot of the April fooling is happening, which I feel like makes a lot more sense. Shout out to Facebook users. But yeah, it's a fun holiday. I don't know. I don't love it, but people do fun things with it. I know Google does something every year. I don't know if they did this year, but they do something big every year where they record a whole video and it's a whole big production. They seem to take April Fool's Day very seriously. But this is not a fooling episode. This is serious. We have a lot of very serious topics. We're going to be talking about Marvel Rivals. We're going to be talking about Red versus Blue Restoration. And we're going to be talking about Unfrosted, that Jerry Seinfeld movie with a jillion famous people in it. I've got a lot to say about that. I'm going to be hosting the quiz today. Topic TB. Well, not TBD. We've decided it. But to be announced, I guess, is what I'll say. I want to start with Red versus Blue. Can we do that? Can we just jump right into that? Because...
Absolutely.
Let's jump.
Let me preface this by saying a few things. I've played Halo a number of times. I like Halo. So Red versus Blue started in 2003. It's literally over 20 years old.
Before you continue, did you watch Red versus Blue?
That's what I'm getting to. No. I think I have the gist of what's going on. I guess I'm questioning. So this the story here. Before we get into opinions, I guess. Red versus Blue Restoration is... Warner Brothers is basically shuttering Rooster Teeth, which is the company that makes the Red versus Blue stuff. They started in 2003 before YouTube even existed. So as a result of that, Rooster Teeth has condensed their final season that they had planned for Red versus Blue into what is essentially a movie. And we got a trailer for that movie. It's coming out May 21st, and it'll be available for digital rental. I believe it costs $15 or something. The gist of Red versus Blue, for those that don't know, is that they've basically taken Halo characters, basically Red Master Chiefs and Blue Master Chiefs, in Blood Gulch, which is a level in Halo 1 or Halo 2, I can't remember. It's probably a level in all the Halos. And they basically make them talk to each other and emote and do comedy in the context of being Halo characters. First of all, I've never watched the show. Do I have that generally right? That's what I have seen.
That's generally right.
It to me, it's a wonder, and I'm not crapping on Red versus Blue. Let me start by saying that. It feels like the audience for this has to be really small, so it's a wonder they've been going for 20 plus years. I don't know that anyone's going to spend $50
to watch
something.
Well, I don't
know
that it's 20 plus years of constant content either.
No, but it's still being around in any sense for 20 plus years implies some kind of staying power, but I think... And, watching the trailer is I guess probably what you would think it's going to be if you're a red versus blue fan. I don't know. Maybe you guys can speak to that. But it's, I think a very important aspect of this is that I don't think anyone's going to pay to watch it. I predict this is going to bomb real hard.
I think people will. That's why I'm saying it's not 20 plus years of continuous content, right? There's a huge nostalgia factor amongst friends of watching Red versus Blue. This was prime sleepover content. You all sat around, you played a bunch of Xbox with your friends, and then you watched some Red versus Blue while, I don't know, having sticky fingers, eating whatever pizza rolls you have around, or pizza bagel bites, or insert pizza product here that's bite-sized and edible. You really are underselling the nostalgia factor. This will sell simply because of that. And you know what? It should. It was hilarious. It was stupid in the best way.
I mean, it was also innovative at the time. It was one of the first series that, I mean, streaming was not a big deal back then. And I'm not saying that this is the same as streaming, because it's not. But even recording gameplay, like, that was relatively rare when Red versus Blue initially came out. And so to record gameplay and then do voiceovers and kind of make a story out of it was a very innovative concept at the time. And I don't really think anybody has really touched that same genre as much as Red versus Blue has. And to Tactic's point, I think the nostalgia factor is a pretty big deal. So I'll talk about this a little bit more in my What Are You Up To? We watched another show that was kind of like peak YouTube web series. But Red versus Blue is one of those pieces of content, as is Rooster Teeth in general, that kind of signified the height of YouTube. And I'm not saying in any way, shape, or form that YouTube is dying. But when you think about like the peak of YouTube, when there really weren't any other video platforms out there, like now there's TikTok, there's Instagram Reels, like people consume internet videos in a completely different way now. There's Twitch, all that kind of stuff. YouTube had at its height web series and short form cinematic content. And I'm not saying this is peak cinema, but this and Rooster Teeth in general kind of represents that era of YouTube kind of coming to an end. So I think from that perspective, people will probably watch this, if not just to, you know, pay homage to the end of an era, so to speak.
There's a rabbit hole to be gone down here, especially as someone like me who doesn't have much exposure to it. So you mentioned before that it's created via gameplay, and I'm kind of googling around as you've been talking whether or not that's true. So there's a technique that's used to make Red versus Blue called machinima. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that right. I think it's just a portmanteau of machine and cinema. But basically you use the graphics engines to create the production, then you add the dialogue over it. I guess I don't know, are they playing the game and basically just like performing scenes and then putting dialogue over? I wonder how it works. And I also wonder a lot about the copyright. Like, wouldn't you think that like Halo and Bungie would be like, hey, if you're making any money off of this, we're entitled to a good chunk of that because we've basically rendered everything for you? There's probably answers to this question in super long video essays or whatever. I agree entirely with your take that the end of this is kind of emblematic of the end of a certain era of YouTube. To give you some more context, and this is a touch point that I do know of, Red vs. Blue, according to Wikipedia, is the second longest running animated web series of all time behind Homestar Runner. And I was a Homestar Runner fan. And that was, again, came out like 02 or 03, something like that. So, yeah, I mean, I can understand nostalgia playing a role in people watching this. I guess, has anyone ever paid for Red vs. Blue content before? And I think the price point is $15. Like, I wonder if that's too steep for people to, are people taking it seriously enough to justify that cost? I guess is my overarching question.
I don't think, like, I'm fairly certain you can go and watch every episode up to this point of Red versus Blue online for free. And I think at one point too, I might be talking out of my butt, but it was definitely on a streaming service. I'm not sure if it was Hulu or Netflix, but one of the seasons of Red versus Blue, it might have been the first one, found a home on Netflix for a little bit. So
yes, it was Netflix.
I don't know if people will necessarily balk at the $15 price point, if only because there's been, I think it was like 14 seasons worth of content. Like, I know it said 21 years, but I think it's like 14 seasons worth of free content. And I think similarly to how, you know, people subscribe to Patreon or they leave coffee tips for creators, this could be seen as like one final send-off for all of the great free content that they've provided throughout the years.
Also, it's movie night with friends. Like, $15 for a couple friends over. But pizza will be way more than this movie. Just do it. Have pizza night with friends. Get those bagel bites. It's kind of a critical item, and just do it.
Like, could you imagine if Homestar Runner came back for like a final time? And it's because Homestar Runner is pretty much dead now, right? Or it has been dead for a while.
I have no idea. That's a really good question.
But like, if it was this big thing, like Homestar Runner is done forever. This is the final, you know, hour long special. Would you watch it? Regardless of like, if, honestly, as long as it was under like $20,
I don't know that I would. And like, I loved Homestar Runner for a minute. Also, Homestar Runner, I think, is still going on. Based on Wikipedia, anyways, it appears to still be going on, which is wild because like Adobe Flash was discontinued in 2020 and that was like Flash everything online. So they had to like change their whole how they're doing things just based on some reading here. I mean, yeah, going back to Red vs. Blue, there were 18 seasons prior to now. Almost all of them appear to have had 20 or more episodes or like around that number of episodes. I don't know how long the episodes are, I guess, but like it's just like a massive thing. And like reading through the plot, like ostensibly it's a comedy, but there's like a really in-depth plot to these. And I don't know, I think it's interesting. Like, it's framed very much to me, or it always has been framed to me, as like, hey, watch this goofy video of two Halo guys talking, and it's probably 5 minutes long. Maybe it's just a clip from one of the episodes or something. There's, I mean, probably
that's
more to it,
how it started. That, yeah. Like, literally, I believe the first couple seasons, like, it was almost skittish. Like, I think there was an overarching plot line, but for the most part, it was just, like, very short episodes that felt more like condensed skits. And I think over time, because of the popularity of it, I think it grew to have a more in-depth plot line. But I think a lot of it is just, like anything on the internet, people finding, you know, little clips.
Notable guest stars on Red vs. Blue. I'm just learning about Red vs. Blue. Elijah Wood was on Red vs. Blue. At one point, he guest starred. Ed Robertson, who maybe many people may not know, but if you're a fan of Bare Naked Ladies, he was like the front man or one of the front men of Bare Naked Ladies. I don't know a lot of these other people, but honestly, Elijah Wood feels like a pretty big deal. Yeah, I maybe I'm not giving this show its due, but like, I don't know if I'm going to like sit down now and binge 18 seasons before watching the restoration thing that's coming. Maybe I should walk back my prediction that it's going to just flop hard, but it also is kind of in this weird spot of like, if it flops hard, it doesn't matter because Rooster Teeth, I think, has already basically been killed. It was killed on March 6th, so it's less than a month dead. This is like their swan song, I guess, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, Rooster Teeth, beyond Red versus Blue, like, they just had so much good gaming content that it does feel weird. And, like, I never watched Rooster Teeth stuff religiously. Like, that's never been my bag. I kind of bounce around if I'm watching YouTube from creator to creator, and I don't really, like, religiously follow many, you know, creations, creators, channels, what have you. But it felt like it was always kind of a staple. Like, they were just doing a lot of stuff in the gaming sphere. And I feel like that just is a weird thing to see go away now.
The only other one I've heard of, and it's weird because it looks like it was on for like zero time, is Genlock. I haven't heard of anything else that they've done. Rooster Teeth, I'm kind of just reading through their Wikipedia now. But yeah, I mean, it does seem like a huge shame that they're dying. It's certainly unique content, to say nothing else. So May 21st is your last chance to see Red vs. Blue, see how everything concludes. Hopefully it'll be a satisfying conclusion. And yeah, go check it out if you are so inclined. Maybe I should sit down and watch a bunch. I mean, if they're like 5 minutes each.
I recommend it. Yeah. At least just a couple. You'll enjoy it. They're funny. They're silly, goofy, dumb, funny.
Well, yeah, I guess I'm also wondering if it first came out in 2003 and it was presumably marketed to, like, using your words, not mine, like teenage boys at sleepovers, I wonder if the humor is going to hit with me. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. I shouldn't pass judgment before watching it, I guess. Anyways, yeah, Red vs. Blue Restoration, May 21st of this year. Let's stick with movies, I guess, calling that a movie. I want to talk about Unfrosted. And to kind of prep us for Unfrosted, I want to ask what all of our relationships with Pop-Tarts are. And I'll go first. I love Pop-Tarts. And it's a thing that I'm trying to, in my adult or ostensibly adult age, I'm trying to get away from Pop-Tarts because they're like pretty bad for you, but they're so good. I every now and then will still, I'll just slam through a sleeve of Pop-Tarts. I'm a Frosted boy though, through and through.
Yeah, I can care less about Pop-Tarts.
I was always a toaster strudel kid growing up. My parents always bought toaster strudels.
It's totally different.
They Okay, but like in terms of breakfast pastry, when people would ask me, would you prefer a toaster strudel or a Pop-Tart? Because I feel like that was a big deal in the like late 90s, early 2000s. I was team toaster strudel all the way. Obviously, though, you grow older and you get to a point where you're buying food out of a vending machine for breakfast, and Pop-Tarts, you know, they win the day.
They
you
sure
don't have to do any prep. They just, you pull them out of their little package and you eat them.
That's the thing is like, I've eaten, if I had to ballpark how many Pop-Tarts I've eaten, individual tarts, not just sleeves, it's got to be thousands at this point in my life that I've eaten. Probably, it's probably thousands, which is disgusting. I've probably actually toasted the Pop-Tart, I don't know, two or three times. Like, I just don't ever, not only do I not do it, I barely even think to do it. Like, the fact that they're supposed to be toasted is just totally not an existent fact in my brain. And I feel like that's kind of like you said, they're in vending machines. They're just like, people just get them and eat them. Like, I wonder what percentage of regular Pop-Tart eaters are toasting them regularly. Because I feel like it's probably a surprisingly low number. Well, to put it,
I only like them toasted, one. And two, I think they're just kind of okay untoasted.
Hey, that's totally fair. I'm also a very strange individual, or I've been told that I'm a very strange individual, because you know what my favorite part of the Pop-Tart is? The crust.
Better be the center.
No, it's the crust where there's nothing, which is weird. I know that's weird. I don't know. I guess I like things that taste bland. I don't know what you, I don't know what that says about me. But yeah, at OW Legal 86, at Online Warriors 1 is our main show account, at OW Tactic, at OW Nerd Bomber. Do you like Pop-Tarts? And if so, how do you take them? Because I'm interested in gathering some more data on this. So, unfrosted the Pop-Tart story, Jerry Seinfeld had a super popular sitcom called Seinfeld. And it went off the air in like 1998 or something. And then he did like Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee for a little bit, which was like, I think, moderately successful. And he kind of just dropped off the grid and stayed off the grid for a while. And I have to assume that the Unfrosted the Pop-Tart story is a passion project for him, because he's like coming back to do it. And he's coming back in like a, what feels like a very big way. And he's got just about every famous, he must have called in so many favors. He's got just about every famous person that he knows in this movie with him. And I think it looks bad. I love Jerry Seinfeld.
This seems like a dumb question. Is it based on a true story? Because if it is, it seems like they took a ton of liberty.
I'm sure it's partially based on a true story. But yeah, they're taking liberty for comedy is certainly what it looks like.
I think that's the bad call. So the Tetris movie, I think, was a good example of something that took a true story and took a little bit of liberty with it to make it a little bit more entertaining, but didn't go too far. I think this is an example of taking a true story too far.
Yeah, Wikipedia, Wikipedia says it's loosely based on a true story. So take from that.
This seems like they took the story of the Pop-Tart and hired Mo, Larry, and Curly to direct it. Well, like, it seems like that level of slapstick comedy.
It's very strange. So Hugh Grant is in this movie, and he's playing Thurl Ravenscroft. Do you guys know who Thurl Ravenscroft is?
Not even in the slightest. Am I supposed to?
It's a fun little trivia question. You are supposed to. He's most famous for being the vocalist for the You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch song from Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Christmas. He apparently also was one of the voices of Tony the Tiger, which I assume is why he's in this movie. But that's what I mean, is he's just like kind of getting a bunch of folks. Bobby Moynihan is in this, and he's playing Chef Boyardee. There's just a lot of folks coming here and just like signing up for bit parts, which is interesting. I think this should be hour-long documentary special on like the History Channel or something of like, how did the Pop-Tart happen? Like, I don't know. I question the amount of comedy to be had in the premise, I think, is my main issue with it. The amount of people they have, that is the only thing that like potentially makes it fun, is that like everyone in it is a famous person. I think that's interesting. And then that makes for fun movies sometimes. But I don't know. I don't think it looks very good. Which is
a shame. We've gotten to this point in movies, and I feel like a lot of it's streaming movies, and I don't know how we got here, but it feels like we're looking at brands and products that were conceived in the 80s, and a lot of, like, there's an entire movie genre that's been built in the last, like, 5 years or so about, like, the start of this iconic 80s or 90s brand.
Well, this is the 60s, but I think your point still holds.
But like, right. But, like, I don't know why we're... And yeah, maybe 80s or 90s isn't correct, because like I don't remember when Tetris was conceived or BlackBerry or any of that. But you have, like I said, BlackBerry, Tetris, the Flamin' Hot Cheetos, the Beanie Bubble, now this. And I feel, and like, oh God, the Air Jordan movie. Where, I don't necessarily doubt that these are interesting stories, but I don't know if all of these products need an hour and a half, 2 hour origin film. I don't think it's always that exciting.
But it's easy to diagnose, like, why this is happening, right? Why the trend exists. Like, first of all, they're playing on nostalgia. But second of all, like, I don't know. Like, I think it's very easy to look at the way life is today and, you know, various...
fantasize about the past.
I was going to say romanticize. But yeah, like look at, like, today and, like, every company is bad because, frankly, most companies are bad. And, like, most products are bad or have a dark side. And, like, I think 10 years ago, we were being inundated with media that would tell us how bad everything was. And, you know, social media has us constantly being reminded of how bad everything is. So, like, getting a movie like this, or a movie like mine, Tetris, I think, had a dark side. But, like, getting movies that are about, like, here's the romanticization of how this thing happened in the 60s that, like, you probably don't think about very much. Like, I think that's the diagnosis, is, like, movie producers and the powers that be are, like, people want escapism when they watch movies, and an easy to create form of escapism is, like, hey, here's how the Pop-Tart was made, and, like, there's maybe
the
comedy in it.
If anyone was well equipped to make a movie that's really not about anything exciting, funny, and successful, it would have been Jerry Seinfeld. So the fact that we saw explosions and things like that is just, like, think about what Seinfeld was. It was, and there was episodes about how it is a show about nothing.
Well, the whole, yeah, like, the whole premise of it is that it's a show about,
yes,
nothing, right?
And so he was in a unique position to make a successful movie about nothing that would have been critically acclaimed and fun and funny. But then when we see these things that, like, why was there an explosion in a Pop-Tart lab? It was just for, like, cheap laughs and a one-bit line at a funeral. Jerry,
well,
you're better than that.
I have a couple of things to say to that. So, like, I think that doing a show about nothing is a lot easier than doing a movie about nothing, because a show about nothing is 30-minute installments that are quote-unquote about nothing. And by the way, Seinfeld is not about nothing. Like, if you've watched Seinfeld, it's definitely about something. It's just, the joke is that it's about nothing. I think that maybe overselling Jerry Seinfeld, who, like, I think is a very talented comedian, like, I think it's overselling his ability to make something about nothing entertaining. I think that I've also watched some of his stand-up semi-recently. Like, I think during the pandemic times, I watched one of his stand-up specials, and it wasn't very funny. I think there's some acknowledgement from me, at least, that the show itself was lightning in a bottle, and him and Larry David, who, by the way, has also gone on to be arguably more successful, really had something, and he's kind of struggled a little bit since then to recapture that lightning in the bottle, and I don't think this is it. I don't think this is him recapturing that.
You think he requires Larry David to be successful?
Maybe.
Kind of to reel him in, so to speak?
Possibly. I don't know if I would go that far, but I mean, Larry David went on to make another show after Seinfeld, which is still going and is still super, super successful. Like, Jerry Seinfeld, not to minimize his accomplishments, but, like, one of the first things he did after Seinfeld was he made the B-movie, which is, like, one of the more common memes on the internet of, like, how not good.
But it kind of makes sense, though. Larry David does have a lot, like, his comedy is a lot more, it's almost, like, sarcastic and grounded. And I'm kind of coming around to what you're saying, where he's kind of the yin to his yang.
If you read about how Seinfeld was created, and if you know any of the behind the scenes stuff, most people would say that Larry David was, like, the true brains of the operation. And, like, that's not to say that Seinfeld didn't have contribution. We're getting off track, but, like, getting back to Unfrosted, it's on Netflix. It's coming out May 3rd. Because it's on Netflix and because there's so many famous people in it, it'll probably do what Netflix wants it to do, which is people will watch it because there's a lot of famous people in it. I don't think anyone's going to be, you know, telling folks, hey, you got to go watch Unfrosted. But I think it's probably going to do fine. And I don't know what that means for Jerry Seinfeld and or what he does next, but it'll probably pay the bills for Netflix. So, like, in that sense, it may be a win. But yeah, I don't know. I probably won't watch it. If you watch it, let me know how it is. I guess that's,
I feel like this is going to have to get in line behind, like I said, all the other brand/product movies that I've not watched yet. I feel like I've heard that the Cheeto movie was actually pretty good.
Right.
So I feel like if I haven't watched...
Right.
Yeah. If I haven't watched that yet, good luck, Pop-Tart movie.
Well, that's the other thing.
Yeah. And Blackberry movie.
I wonder, like, there probably is an interesting story here. But taking those two examples, the Blackberry movie and the Cheetos movie, both of those are so much more interesting just premises. Take out the comedy entirely. Just take out everything else and basically just say, I'm going to tell three stories. One about how Blackberry... The rise and fall of BlackBerry, one about how the Cheeto was invented, and one about how the Pop-Tart was invented. Which one is the least interesting? I'd pick the Pop-Tarts one every time. And that's someone who loves Pop-Tarts. It's just maybe not of the same caliber. Like, Cheetos were invented, I believe, by like a janitor, right? Isn't that the story? Pretty sure that's how it goes. Spoiler alert, I guess.
Yeah, you're
going to watch
so.
The movie. And BlackBerry, like, BlackBerry did a lot of iPhone things before the iPhone did. That's kind of the pull to watching the BlackBerry movie, which I haven't seen, but I've heard it's really good. So, like, what does Unfrosted have in terms of, like, intrigue? I guess two competing companies, Post and Kellogg's, but, like, whatever Post did is totally lost to time, so why am I supposed to care
about
it?
Well, it was shelf-stable fruit was what it was touting.
Right. But why is that interesting?
Because it's shelf-stable.
Well, it's not like it even, though, like, went on to create a universe of breakfast pastries. Do you know what I mean? Like, when I think of two companies competing, like, for example, oh boy, was it Atari and Sega back in the day? Mm-hmm. Am I thinking that correctly? Atari and Nintendo. It was like a console war that was happening.
There was also Intellivision, but that might not be what you're thinking of.
But I feel like that at least influenced an entire industry. Whereas, like, the Pop-Tart didn't really spin off other Pop-Tarts. Like, it's Pop-Tart still.
There's a lot of flavors, and they try to, like, try different form factors with it. As someone who buys Pop-Tarts somewhat regularly, they, like, try stuff with it a lot of the time, and most of it never works. But, like, yeah, I think one of the points you're trying to make is that, like, Kellogg's is, when you say, like, what does Kellogg's make today? You don't really say Pop-Tarts. The first thing you say is cereal. Like, that's still kind of just their thing. And, like, Pop-Tarts are certainly a big part of their business. But, like, is it enough to make a movie about it and an interesting movie about it? And then when you layer comedy over what little interesting stuff you have, doesn't it kind of just, like, dilute everything and then you're left with nothing? I just, that's kind of where I'm landing on this. But, you know, who knows? I'd like to be proven wrong, but I don't know that I will be. So, May 3rd, 2024, this is coming out on Netflix. Sorry, Mr. Seinfeld, but I don't really see the vision here, at least yet. We'll take a short break now before coming back to talk about Marvel Rivals. But before we do that, it's that time of the show yet again where I shout out our fantastic Patreon producer, Mr. Stephen Keller. Stephen's been supporting us on the show for quite a while now as a Patreon producer. He gets this producer shout out every episode. He gets input into the weekly game segment. He gets the occasional guest spot on the show, as well as, of course, access to the monthly secret segment and the monthly vlog. He gets all of these benefits as a knight level subscriber on our Patreon. That's the highest of our three levels of support. There's also a squire level of support, which gets you access to the monthly secret segment and vlog, and a page level, which gets you access to the monthly secret segment. So you can head over to patreon.com/onlinewarriorspodcast, grab all the details there, and say hi to us and say hi to Steven and look into the benefits of giving back to this show and helping us continue to create. So thanks again to Steven. We'll be right back to talk about Marvel Rivals.
Venture deep into the backwaters of space. Mint Space Station, a lawless metropolis run by gangsters, where anyone could earn a fair day's pay if they're willing.
Ah, you're here for the job?
Meet Cleo, a bipedal bear creature armed to the teeth.
If I was an inch taller, I'd be round!
And Dr. Z, a psychic jellyfish.
Now in surgery, we want to go for the heart and the brains.
Join these friends on a haphazard adventure, trying to make their way in cold, uncaring space. A podcast filled with adventure, action, romance, and friendship to conquer the ages. So if you want to hear more from the Backwater Bastards, search Backwater Bastards wherever you get your podcasts or visit us at backwaterbastards.com. Backwater Bastards, a comedy sci-fi tabletop podcast.
All right, welcome back. We're going to talk through Marvel Rivals. We got First of all, that, for me, that's a, that manages to be a tongue twister, and I really don't know why. But we got a trailer for this earlier this week. This is an upcoming free-to-play PC title. 6v6 PvP shooter featuring, of course, Marvel characters. The conclusion that's drawn by many is that it looks like Overwatch. Open beta, sorry, I think it's actually a closed beta. Closed beta is coming, I believe, in May. I'll have to check the details on that. But I have some questions about this. Let me just say, I have questions. Not all Marvel, it's not a shooter. It's not a pure shooter, is it? Because not every character shoots. Like, can we just start there?
Yeah, I don't think so.
I think it looked good. I think it looked, I might be too old for this game. It looks too busy. I was like, there's too much going on. I'm distracted by all the bright colors. I think the team up thing is amazing. The team up mechanic. We should talk through that a little bit because I think that's like a really cool thing. But first impressions from you guys. What's the vibe coming through on Marvel Rivals?
Well, I thought it looked just like Overwatch.
I mean, Overwatch is first person and this is obviously third person. But I see the inspiration from Overwatch. I see, like, especially the 6v6 like PvP style play. I see what they're going for. They're trying to make the next big arena game. I wonder if this will actually take off. I mean, I know this is free to play, so like that always has an element of attractiveness to people. But I just think that, I don't know, something about this doesn't seem as compelling as a lot of the other arena shooters that have come out in the last 5-10 years. And I can't really put my finger on why.
So I think the destructible environments, partially destructible environments, I think that's a cool addition. Like, I think it's doing a lot of things right. I wonder the extent to it, because like obviously these aren't like the movies actors that are doing this, but I wonder the extent to which Marvel fatigue, which the world is currently actively engaged in, like, I guess what I'm saying is this could be coming out at a far better time. If this came out in like, I don't know, 2017, it probably would have been a smash hit. But like, I think a lot of base reactions to this are probably like, we don't need more Marvel content.
I don't think the reactions are, ugh, more Marvel content. I think the reactions are, ugh, more team battle content.
Yeah, that's fair.
Really what I think, because like the character selection looked awesome, the combat looked awesome. It's really just, oh, another one. And like, I think if they came out, you know, when say Overwatch or these other kind of team battle games came out where they can kind of be, stand on their own and not be compared to, I think it would do much better. But I think it's kind of late to the party.
Yeah, I think the market is a little bit saturated right now. And I don't, I guess I say that, but I also don't want to put that qualifier out there because I feel like every time we think the market is saturated, there's a new game that comes in and it's got a slightly different take on the genre and it kind of takes over. Because Overwatch, I mean, that obviously took the world by storm, as did Fortnite, but I feel like other games like Apex that came in and moved the needle a little bit as well. So like, I don't want to discourage developers from trying, but it just feels like you really have to have a strong offering in order to compete with what's out there right now. And I don't know if the IP alone is going to be enough to bring people in, and in fact may actually detract from people's enjoyment of this game.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe I'm just too bitter about the MCU right now.
In any genre of game, right, innovation is always possible. Like you said, games have come in and moved the needle. I don't know that this game is going to do enough, or maybe even anything, to move the needle. Like, I think the things we mentioned, like the partially destructible environments, the character team ups, you know, being able to be Rocket Raccoon and jump on Groot's back, like, that's really cool. But does it extend far enough beyond just a gimmick to kind of make it something truly special is I think a very fair question. Yeah, I think that this, I don't know where I land on this, because this is weird, because on paper I think it sounds great, and you know, the trailer I think looked fine too. It's just, I think when you sit down and sit with the idea for more than like 10 seconds, you're like, but do we really need this? And it seems like that's kind of where we're all landing on it, which I think is a reasonable take. But I want to read through the list of 18 characters confirmed, and I want you guys to say, based on either the trailer or just knowing the characters, who you'd want to play as. So we have Rocket Raccoon, Groot, Doctor Strange, Black Panther, Iron Man, Spider-Man, Star-Lord, Scarlet Witch, Loki. Is it Namor? I don't know how to pronounce that one. Magneto.
Namor.
Namor. Magneto, Magic, Storm, Penny Parker, Luna Snow, Hulk, Mantis, and the Punisher. Now, there's a few here. Luna Snow and Magic, and Penny Parker. I assume Penny Parker is some other version of Spider-Girl or something, but the other two, I don't know anything about them. So there's an interesting variety here. Based on the trailer, I thought Loki looked like the most fun because you can basically just mimic other characters. I think that provides the most interesting gameplay. I guess I don't know for sure if that's who I would play as, but I think that was the most interesting one. So does anything jump out to you guys as being particularly noteworthy or like ones that you really wanted to play as?
I would probably be Groot because I love Groot and I feel like that would be fun. And I feel like there's a lot that they can do with, you know, tree abilities and growing abilities.
Tree combat. Yeah, it is like, yeah. I think there's a lot, you know, the trailer was like a minute and a half or something. There's a lot we saw, but there's also a lot we didn't see. And I think there's probably a lot more to come before this hit, maybe even before this hits closed beta in May, but after that too. Tactic, any thoughts on characters that you would be interested in?
I'm just always a fan of Hulk, just going berserker. And yeah. I feel like with the destroyable combat, you can generate a lot of collateral damage.
I mean, going by the book, right? Like Hulk and Doctor Strange are probably the two single most powerful characters here. But, you know, obviously based on comic book lore, that may be true. But like, does it translate into the game? Probably not. There's probably characters that there's going to be some semblance of balance, right? Because the other thing I never understand, and Tactic, maybe you can clear this up for me as our resident comic book expert. So Magneto's in this game and Iron Man's in this game. Couldn't Magneto kind of just like squinch Iron Man's suit up and then he's dead?
Maybe if it's not a magnetic alloy?
Yeah.
Like, let's say his suit's made of stainless, right? It's not ferritic.
It's like, isn't it a gold titanium alloy? Don't they say that in the movies? And maybe that's not.
Yeah, and I think also Magneto is like any metal because like he's done stuff with adamantium, right? Wolverine, for example.
Yeah, I think it's any metal. I don't actually. I'm getting too into the weeds here, but like my point is, there's probably characters that fight really well against other characters and characters that may be weak against other characters, things like that.
So I think no matter what, right? Iron Man's going to say, oh, yeah, you can't control me because comic book reasons, right?
Right. My arc reactor puts out a blah, 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 blah. I think there's a very good chance that I'm thinking into this and reading into this a lot more than the game's creators have. Like, they may not have thought about this at all. They might have been like, Spider-Man shoots webs, Iron Man shoots repulsors, Star-Lord shoots guns, Loki can be everyone. And like, they kind of just go through and like give characters abilities and then like establish balance after that's done without thinking too deeply into the lore. We can maybe find out in the closed alpha, which starts in May. Registration is officially open now. Well, actually, that might not be true. Registration may or may not be open. You'll have to look into it yourself. I'm actually not sure. It can currently be wishlisted on both Steam and the Epic Games Store. I'm not a PC gamer, so I don't really have a horse in this race. Are you guys going to give this one a go, or are you going to give it a pass?
I mean, it's free. I'll probably boot it up at one point.
Couldn't hurt,
give it
right?
A whirl.
Try it.
My problem is I'm not a big team gamer.
Oh, I love team for me.
I love team gaming. I was no so one, big into Destiny, so, team gaming.
Yeah, but I don't have awesome. Friends.
If we all play together, sure. But if I have to team up with randos and communicate, nah.
You don't have to communicate though. That's the thing. Like I would go so hard on Destiny, no mic, just Rogan. But like people still appreciated my prowess every now and then, and then other times they were like, this guy sucks. What's this guy doing? And that was it. Didn't really ruin my fun, but I guess I can understand how it would. So again, Marvel Rivals May closed alpha, exact date TBD. Go check out the trailer for it, and I don't know, consider which hero you would like to play as, assuming you have a choice. It's time for What Are You Up To Wednesday. This is the part of the show where we talk about what we've been up to, and I'm gonna go first because I'm particularly excited about something, and it involves me telling a very short story. Story is, this weekend, I was getting my oil changed in my car, and my dad happened to be at a nearby car dealership test driving. I'm not going to even say the brand of the car. I'm just going to say it was a really nice car. And he said, hey, I'm going to swing by for a test drive. You want to like come on the test drive with me? And I was like, sure. I've never been in X car before. So I got in the car, and dads, you know, I think dads have this way with test driving, because I've test driven cars with my dad and I've been in the driver's seat. You know what they always tell you to do? What dads will tell you to do when you test drive a car?
Buckle up.
No, that would be smart. Like, the first time I test drove my car with my dad, it's a bit of a tangent now, but I pulled out into traffic and he was like, all right, gun it. Like, dads just want to see what the car can do. You know, that's kind of like the dad mode of test driving, I feel like. Maybe it's just my dad. I don't know. But he's driving this car that it's a very nice car, and it can go really fast if you tell it to. So he guns it because that's his way. And I felt the engine, and I felt the momentum and the acceleration and just the power. And I was like, I really want to play a racing video game when I get home. So I did. But specifically, I busted out the Xbox 360 and I booted up the old Need for Speed Most Wanted. We're talking the 2005 Most Wanted, kids, not that other one, which maybe was fine. But yeah, I'm talking about the best one, the one that was legit, that was too legit to quit. And let me tell you, here in 2024, it is still too legit to quit. In fact, it may be more legit. It's definitely not quitting. It's incredible. It's amazing. I could say so many great things about it. The live action acting is terrible, but it's funny. The music is like, I mean,
music slaps.
They so tightly dialed in like what was like 14-year-old illegal wanting to hear when he was cruising the streets in his sick ride. It's like there's like Avenged Sevenfold and Mastodon, and then there's like also some like vaguely electronic. Like, it's a weird mix of genres, but every single song hits. The Pursuit music also absolutely hits. The Pursuit in that game is incredible. It's still probably the best Pursuit mechanic in any racing game I've ever played. It's just incredible. Like, if you haven't played it, and if you have the ability to get your hands on a 360 and a copy of this game, you will not be sorry. Like, yes, graphically, they're like early 360 graphics, so you're not going to, you know, have your pants blown off by this game graphically. There's not a whole lot of triangles, but you don't care because, like, the racing gameplay is great. The car customization is great. The career mode and, like, the blacklist, it's just everything is, like, perfect. I haven't even mentioned the challenge mode, the toll booth races. Everything about this game rules. You should go play it. So yeah, there's that. And then I also, the second piece of my update is that I watched a movie called Anyone But You. Have you guys seen this movie yet? Because it's like a big...
We haven't seen it, but I've seen all the ads for it.
It's a... Here's my mini review, because I've talked for a long time. It's a fine movie. Sydney Sweeney is terrible. I don't know how she... She was so bad. Like, I can't even... Sorry, Sydney. I know you're a big deal right now, but... You gotta act just a little bit. You gotta, like, try. Especially when you're standing next to Glenn Powell, who's, like, clearly kind of giving it his all. She was, like, surprised. Because I've never watched Euphoria. I've only watched one movie ever with her in it. And, like, the movie was weird, so it was hard to get a gauge of what her acting skill was. But she's, like, the leading lady in this movie, and it's a romantic comedy. So she's, like, kind of doing a lot. And, boy, was none of it compelling. The movie itself was, like, again, it was okay. It was aggressively mid. I don't know why it's done as well as it's done. I think it's just the thing we talk about all the time, which is like the mid-budget romantic comedy is kind of dead. So whenever one comes along, everyone's like, wow, and maybe overvalues it now. Because this movie is like doing gangbusters at the box office and what have you. It's a super popular streaming movie right now. It was an okay movie. She was terrible. Glenn Powell was like pretty good. You could do worse, definitely. But there's also like, I've watched probably a handful of better romantic comedies in the past few years than this movie. Tactic, why don't you take us into the mind and the world of my fellow host?
So we watched a based on a true story movie called Next Goal Wins, and it is about a soccer coach that has the choice between either getting fired from his coaching gig or moving to coach the American Samoa team. And he obviously picks to keep working as a coach, and this team has never scored a goal in the history of the team. Okay, that's how good they were. So their goal was just to score a goal, and it goes through like the him kind of becoming a better person, him growing as well as the team growing, and it's a feel-good movie, and I think everyone won in the end, like emotionally, and that's... It was just, I 10 out of 10 recommend it. There's not much more that I've been working on. It's really just working on my game. I have a demo coming up within the Online Warriors Q1 meeting. And that needs to be ready. So it's really just been that movie. And so I'm going to kick it over to Nerd Bomber.
This is Taika, right?
It is, yeah.
Taika Waititi.
Yeah. Yeah. I
thought it was a good movie.
It came across my radar. Sounds like a feel-good time.
Yeah, it's, like I said, it's one of those, I don't want to compare it to like, Cool Runnings, but kind of sort of feels like that, just in that, you know, a team that a national team rather that really doesn't perform well at the national level kind of starts to get their shit together. I don't know. It's maybe not an apt comparison, but it's a feel-good sports movie, and there's not a lot of those either anymore. Like, if you think back in like the 90s and the early 2000s, we used to get a ton of feel-good sports movies, and we don't really get a lot of those anymore.
Yeah, you had Miracle, Remember the Titans, Mighty Mighty Ducks, Mighty Ducks 2, Angels D3. In the Out, D3, Angels in the Outfield, Like Mike, if you want to count that one, Flubber, they play basketball in Flubber, all kinds of sports content.
It's kind of like the Ted Lasso vibe, but distilled down into an hour and a half-ish movie. So, yeah.
I mean, it sounds like a formula for success.
And then on my end, if that's all Tectic has to share
that's
with
all
us,
I
had a very long week. And so, do you ever have that moment where you don't even have enough like mental capacity to watch a new show? So you have to go back and revisit something that you've already watched before?
Yeah, all the time.
So I've already done a rewatch recently of New Girl. Chuck is usually a go-to. I did that recently, so I didn't want to jump into Chuck. Plus, the episodes are a little bit long. The Office, I feel like I've kind of officed myself out a little bit. I've watched too much. Parks and Rec, same thing. So what came across my YouTube feed, for whatever reason, was Video Game High School. And earlier we were talking about Rooster Teeth and like the, you know, peak of YouTube cinema, if you will. And this was... Oh man, I'm trying to think. Rocket Jump, I think, was the production company. And they were, you know, I don't want to call them small time, but like a small time YouTube outfit. And the first season was very relatively short, like 15 minute episodes. The premise was that in a future world, schools focused on competitive gaming because it was, you know, a big deal in the world and you made a lot of money. And so you would go to a video game high school to, you know, be recruited for the pros and prepare for, you know, the real world of competitive gaming. And it was a very good show. And I haven't watched it in a while. You can find it all on YouTube. The first season, I think they made with a budget of $600,000. And essentially what they do, which I find incredible even now, I feel like a lot of shows don't have the graphics capabilities and budget to pull off something that looks as good as what this show did. But instead of, you know, just showing people sitting at a computer playing a game, they basically took those characters and put them in, you know, the game scenario. So, for example, like the FPS team, instead of just showing them all sitting at their computers playing COD, they actually put them in, you know, the COD scenario. So they're in like commando gear with real guns, explosions, etc. Same thing, like they have some like a drift team that focuses on racing. So instead of showing them just behind a racing wheel, they actually put them in real cars and do real stunts. And it was a very funny show, lighthearted show. And then in season three, the way that it developed like self-awareness and more like a grown-up personality as it kind of
almost cried,
kissed the show goodbye. I forgot how good this show was. Obviously, if you're watching it for the first time as an adult, like, you might not relate to the kids stuff anymore. But, like, we watched this when it originally came out and we were kids.
I didn't cry during Marley and Me, and this show choked me up.
You like, didn't cry during Marley and Me? What's wrong with you?
No, he's a psycho.
It's messed up, man.
But, yeah, it was very good. So, if you're in the mood and you can put yourself in the mindset of, like, a teenager, it was a very well-done peak YouTube web series type show. So there's not a ton to it. Like, you can probably binge it all in the span of like a week.
Yeah, 21 total episodes. I'm looking at it now.
And the entire first season, most of them are like 15 minutes long. It wasn't until season two and three that they started getting like a bigger budget. I think they ended up spending like $3 million between season two and three, and they actually did like higher quality stunts. But yeah, it was for what it was at the time, and even for now, it was very impressive.
That's a good PSA. I'm always looking for feel-good shows. Very cool. Anything else to update us on?
That was the main thing, honestly. I started and finished that entire series in a week. So,
well, are you guys ready for the eclipse?
That's our
premise into the quiz. You know, the eclipse is happening. This is not the quiz is about the eclipse. The reason I'm asking if we're ready for the eclipse is because in every single state in the United States, the eclipse will have some sort of effect. Whether it's partial or full is another matter entirely, but it's kind of a big deal here in the US of A. There's a lot of talk about it. So it makes perfect sense that the quiz this week features the eclipse. Now, I will be hosting. Before I do my hosting, let's go through the records. Nerd Bomber sitting atop the pyramid at 5-3. I am 5-4. Tactic 4-4. Steven 0-1. Bit of a bummer for Steven. So Tactic and Nerd Bomber will be squaring off today. And once again, Tactic, if you manage to win, we will all be tied at 5-4. So I guess use that as motivation. As always, the quiz is Price is Right style. Everyone gets 1+1 or an answer of 1. And because Nerd Bomber has the better record, she will go first, as that gives Tactic a slight advantage. All right. We may all recall that the last total solar eclipse was in 2017. It was the one where Donald Trump stared directly at it. But when was the one before that? The last total solar eclipse in the U.S., visible in the continental U.S.
Yeah, the one before that.
The one before that, but it was visible in the U.S. That's the
I said 2008, right?
Yeah, I want to make sure it's not like worldwide. I didn't mean worldwide. I meant viewable in the continental U.S. So you're sticking with 08?
I'm going to stick with 08.
Okay. Tactic?
This was 1509.
Okay. A very bold strategy. It does pay off. 1979 is what we were looking for. So it was actually like almost 40 years
before. Oh, so like a
before.
Long, long time ago.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So there's a lot of math involved with when eclipses happen and where they're seen from. The math wasn't really mathing for you, but it was mathing for Tectic. He was obviously way off, but he used strategery to, get the first point. So cheers to you, Tectic. How many weeks did Bonnie Tyler's Total Eclipse of the Heart spend at the top of the charts in the United States? If you don't know what song this is, yes, you do.
Once upon a time, I was falling in love. Now I'm only falling apart.
Classic. Good record.
You didn't know. Now you know. Okay. This was like 8 weeks.
Nerd Bomber.
I feel like 8 weeks is a fairly long time. I'm going to say 2.
Nice work. It was 4 weeks. This song was actually a really big deal in the UK because Bonnie Tyler is a UK artist. It was still big in the US. Obviously, we all know the song, but it was only on the top of the charts for 4 weeks. So Nerd Bomber gets to that point. We're all tied up. So there is a line that is going across the continental US, and under that line, it's called the center line of totality, and that's basically the path through which the total eclipse will be. And my question is, how many states in the United States will the center line of totality pass through for the eclipse next week? As I said before, at least a partial eclipse will be visible in all 50 states.
I feel like 14 is the right answer here.
I think you're like just like a smidge too high. I think you're like a smidge too high. What guess? This is the third question. I have next
that's,
one.
That's
she
correct.
Has the fifth one. That's so correct. I still have one more chance to plus one. So I'm not going to do that now. I'm going to say it's only 4 states, even though I know it's more.
You should have plus one. It was 15. So she was really close. Dang, but if you would have plus one, you would have bullseyed it. So I was waiting for you to do that. That would have been really, really saucy. So Nerd Bomber is now ahead 2-1. And we move into question 4. So there's a center line of totality that passes through 15 U.S. states. But the time of totality actually varies in each of those states and in each location on the center line. The maximum observable totality will be in Nazas, Mexico. What will that maximum time of totality be? Basically, how long will the totality be observed for? And we'll do it in minutes and seconds as the unit.
220 minutes and 5 seconds. I don't know.
And Nerd Bomber.
1 second.
Yeah, very well played. Tactic, you were way too high. The sun moves.
Yeah,
the sun and the moon move really fast.
It's only like
the news said that it starts
minutes.
Like at one time, and then it's like hours later is when it ends.
Right, but like the actual full.
Oh, I thought you were talking the event. Okay,
no, the totality. Kind of 4 minutes and 28 seconds, and I'm not gonna give you any pity because I feel like I said totality like 4 times in the question. So, Nerd Bomber takes it. That's a 3-1. So she pulls away. We'll do the last question for goofs. What was the global box office total for the Twilight Saga Eclipse?
I love this. This is a big deal. I'm going to say, did you say global, right?
I said global, yes.
$500 million.
Tactic.
And one.
$500 million and one penny. Yeah, Tactic gets the point. So he pulls it to within a respectable distance. $698.4 million. And it's worth noting that the two movies that followed Eclipse grossed even more because Twilight was a big deal. So that moves Nerd Bomber to 6-3. It moves Tectic down to 4 and 5, and I remain at 5 and 4. So next week, Tectic and I will be duking it out for second place. Or I guess a tie for second place. If Tectic wins, we'll be tied in second place. So stay tuned for that. Well, maybe don't stay tuned. If you're listening to this live, it's going to be a week until we have that out. But be on the lookout for that, I guess is what I'll say. In the meantime, we thank you all for joining us here on the latest episode of the Online Warriors Podcast. Hit us up on Patreon, patreon.com/onlinewarriorspodcast. Hit us up on Twitter at the handles mentioned previously in the episode. And consider stopping by Apple Podcasts, leaving us a review over there, letting us know whether you liked the show or whether you didn't. And have a great week. Be sure to safely observe the eclipse if you are in the path of totality, or even if you're not, go get some glasses. They're everywhere.
Don't stare at the sun.
Don't stare at the sun. It's not safe. You really shouldn't be doing that. So with that in mind, and more broadly speaking, we'll say stay safe and keep on podcasting.